SiriusXM Sports presents At the Races with Steve Bick. Horse racing, handicapping, interviews. This is At the Races with Steve Bick.
We're back, and they're warming up for the Coventry, and we'll have a couple of minutes. Andy Serling's going to join us, too, see if Andy maybe has any ideas in here with the two-year-olds. I will tell you, going through the market, the horse that has got a clear, there's a clear angle on the 24, Vange. This is an Ifrage colt, and Richard Fahey trains. Sylvester D'Souza rides 60-1 on our tote, but trading at 25-1. You know, among the, you know, there's a bunch of big prices, 100-1, 50, 80, 66. But Vange is the one that is actually taking action in the bookies. And if you're looking for a fun, if you're just kind of watching this and looking for silly action, that may be. And oh, he just dropped to 50-1. So now maybe here as we approach post time, maybe Vange comes back in line. But I'm just showing you how I look at these because they're kind of fun, and you do find these disparities. Andy Serling joins us. He's watching along, and Andy, you noted that the Yoshida turned in a very solid effort half hour ago.
I mean, it's sort of silly that being fifth to four long shots constituted a good performance for a horse that maybe would have won the Manhattan, but he ran better than I expected.
Well, there's so many experiences here about the way these races are run, when it's on the straight, for instance, at that distance, and we'll see that in a little bit with the Kingstand in about a half hour. And what's your on this or any international racing? I know I've asked you this before, but how active do you play these much?
No, I don't know enough about these horses. I like to watch them occasionally. I've played, but maybe look at the arc and bet a few dollars on that. I bet a couple bucks on Recoletto's in the first race. I figured there's value betting against Yoshida and Ben Bettel. Not sure why anybody would think a horse would reproduce surprisingly good form for Godolphin and Dubai at Ascot. Did they not notice Sun Thunder Snow somehow winning the World Cup by 8 lengths?
That's an interesting value.
No, it's fun to watch. I think if you're a racing fan, it's fun to watch. And it's good to have an idea of who the supposedly the best horses in Europe are, and we'll see some at the end of the year. Just listen, like racing, so it's fun. I think Ascot's. I'm not exactly sure what all the. I understand that Wesley Ward has done very well in Ascot, but he has a sort of plan, and he's had one for years, and he's executed fairly well, to say the least. But it's not really doesn't really transcribe over to our older horses. I know Teppan won, but the list of massive failures by horses that have gone over there at the expense of being in races where they perhaps could have been competitive for real money,
Sure.
It's not a pretty list. People forget about Animal Kingdom, and he was a pretty good horse, how badly he ran. Obviously Dorsey Center last year was a ridiculous horse, but still, he's absolutely nowhere. And we've seen it since they've gone over there. But listen, they've done a good job of somehow getting American connections to bring horses that are badly overmatched for these races.
The 2-year-old,
some of the decisions you make.
The first 2-year-olds entering the gate now for this Coventry, and to give you an idea, some pretty nice names coming out of this race the last decade. Henry the Navigator, Canford Cliffs, Dawn Approach, Caravaggio. Caravaggio 2 years ago. That Raja Singh last year.
There's no Wesley Ward horses this year, right?
No.
Who's the favorite? Calix?
Calix, yeah.
Calix. and the Sergey Prokofiev.
Yes, but there are, you know, you look at where the winners have come from. Typically, Newcastle, Marble Hill, Ayr, Leopardstown, Newbury. Those are the places that you want to look apparently for winners in here, because you got so little to go on when you look at these past performances, one or two starts. With a field of 23.
I have no way of knowing anything about these horses. I mean, I barely know anything about the 2-year-olds that are running in America. So. I'm not going to suggest that. I mean, it's a huge field, right?
Yeah, 23.
Surprised they didn't ask you to come over and broadcast from Ascot. Sort of shocking.
I would love it. I'd love to do it. Would love to do it. We may.
I'm sure you would. I don't think that. Don't expect the call any minute, but you never know.
That's just another one of those calls I shouldn't expect.
Yeah, this one's unlikely. Is this a Judmont horse?
It is.
Okay, well, they're easy to see.
Yes, they are.
Easier.
And, well, I'll tell you what, he doesn't want to load Calix, which is not.
Oh boy, that's mad. Doesn't matter at all, right?
Well. And they don't waste time. If you're recalcitrant, they'll leave you behind the gate.
Well, load another race.
8-5 on Calix.
Are you playing the call live?
Here we go.
They get away to what looks to be a fairly even break. Calix is 3 from the right, one of the first of the runners away, and Vange in yellow goes on to lead them very early on. 2 in second position is the Colour Change, Shine So Bright, and then also Dubai Legacy. Cosmic Law leads the group on the right to Indigo Balance and No Needs Never and Calix, and Burge is just in behind those from Boa Nova and Getcha Getcha Getcha. Shaban is just in behind the leaders on the far side group with the orange jacket of I'm a Dreamer there from Alfie Solomons, and Sergei Prokofiev is in that group from Advertise. And then also comes Midnight Sands, are already heading down to the 2 marker. Calix towards the right with a pink cap has come into this very strongly. Indigo Balance in the green and white jacket is with him the near side, and then comes the Irish Rover. Meanwhile Vange and Shine So Bright down the far side of the course, but it's Frankie on Calix as they approach the furlong pole. Leads to the yellow jacket of Vange on the far side from Shine So Bright, but Calix is 2 or 3 lengths ahead. He's 100 yards to go, and it's Calix in front. The others beginning to catch him, though. Advertise and Sergei Prokofiev coming home strongly, but Calix won it. Advertise and Sergei Prokofiev the next 2. Vange is behind those in 4th, and they will well clear the others.
Well, you see that parting of the seas, the 2 groups spread out. Calix pretty quickly established position and stayed on nicely. That Vange that we pushed and noticed was taking money in the bookies ended up at 40-1, is going to be 4th, and it looked like Advertise, the 1 for Phoenix Thoroughbreds, ended up 2nd, and Sergei Prokofiev 3rd. So call it 7-1-20-24.
This horse might have moved a little soon.
You think the winner was?
Well, I mean, he opened up like 2 or 3, didn't he?
Yeah.
Like, you know, the purple or something. I don't think about these horses. But, yeah, I mean, it seemed like he was going to win by a pole and kind of made a little bit of a run out of it at the end. Is that the Tory riding him?
Yes. Yes. So you're looking at, in terms of prices, yeah, he did. He came.
He got
late.
But he got through another horse came on to beat him for 2nd. Actually, he was the horse who was finished 2nd was really running at the end.
Well, and Advertise was 11-1 2nd. Sergei Prokofiev was going to be the 2nd choice, 3-1, and then Vange, who I found 40-1. So those of you that are playing along, 7-1. 2024 in the first of the 2-year-old races today, and they'll run the Windsor Castle later, where Wesley Ward is involved.
So
we'll look forward to that.
Which race is that? The fifth race?
That's the sixth.
That's torture. St. James Palace will be the last one I'll make.
Well, you mentioned the palace, and of course, with North American interest there, Without Parole, the Frankel for the Gunthers.
Who?
Without Parole.
Is he running in America?
Not in America, no. He's been strictly campaigning.
He's bred here. Well, a lot of horses are bred in the U.S.
Well, but also...
I know they don't buy our horses because we're all really good drugs and nobody's missing our horses.
My favorite
topic. They
all are
either Kentucky breds, or many of them are Kentucky breds, or they're descended from, you know...
Exactly.
They're loath to buy our revolting horses, but...
Well,
somehow they seem to show up in the PPs all the time. I don't know.
It's amazing. And they buy all the mares. And yes.
Right.
for seven figures.
Such BS in my life.
Well, Without Parole, 3 for 3, Newcastle, Yarmouth, and Sandown, and bred by the Gunthers, and they're over there.
Frankel, they're a big role.
Yeah, they are. And out of a Lemon Drop Kid mare, Without You, Babe.
I vaguely feel Without You, Babe.
Without You, Babe.
I'm getting horse confused. That's not a horse that was trained by like Peter Pugh or something.
Let's find out. You and I go on these adventures all the time. Without You, Babe. Lemon Drop Kid, and a. She was unraced. She was actually unraced.
Yeah, I'm thinking of somebody else. It's a horse with a name similar to that. But,
anyway. Well, this is the family. Okay, this I hadn't looked at until now. This is the brother of Tamar Coos.
No, he was a nice horse. Even the Dolphin Mile.
He won the mile. Yes.
Yes. Maybe fourth in the. In the Matters thing.
He was, and well, and he won the, he was a dirt mile winner, Tamar Coos, right?
Oh, he won a dirt mile, yeah, that's right. He won the year that, what's his name, was a big favorite. And the horse of Baffert's, Dortmund, right? Is it Dortmund?
Maybe. I think you're right. I think you're right.
Am I wrong? Somebody was a big favorite that ran badly. It's Dortmund.
I think you're right. He was like a bad fourth, right?
Yeah. Fast pace, right?
Well, this, of course, the family of Stay Thirsty and Andromeda's Hero, the second dam, Marozia.
Did Gunrunner run in that mile? Run well?
He was...
Second or third?
Second or third, yeah, I think so.
Yeah, he ran really well. He was on top of the pace, and he actually held very gamely, right? And then he went on his run, right? Clark and... For the race he ran.
Yeah. We made, as part of the best ofs, I actually put together.
It was a long time ago and it wasn't.
I know, right? Well,
there's a lot of racing since then.
Exactly. That's exactly right. Well, waiting for numbers.
What else is going on, Steve?
We're gonna talk a little bit about some more postscript to the weekend. How about, Andy... And you wrote a very interesting tweet from the weekend.
Steve, all of my tweets are interesting. I'm a little
not
bit
all.
Upset. That you
not all.
Okay, you're right. Not all. Many of them are.
Many of them are great. No, you
no,
brought up a topic.
Randomly.
Well, the topic you brought up, and we haven't had rain since before Belmont. And
yeah,
so,
I feel like the court... Courses must be cut very short, but anyway.
You think that contributed?
I could be wrong. I meant to ask Glenn. I don't know, and I can ask Glenn. I just keep forgetting to text him. But it's got really fast. It's not. Yesterday was like the only hot day we've gotten. It's gotten like faster than you see in July. You know what I mean? Than you see in deep summer when it gets really firm. So I have to think it's more than just not having rain for a week or so. You know.
Yeah,
I could be wrong, but it just felt like it were unusually fast. Anyway, go ahead.
Well, you brought up a topic that seemed to really strike a chord with people, which is designating turf courses with more detail than just firm, good, yielding, and soft.
Yeah, I understand that you could argue that, well, dirt's sort of the same, right? But dirt's different. Because dirt is dirt, you know? Whereas I think turf, it really does, there are going to be horses that are more and less effective with different types of ground. And listen, you know, it's one thing when we're running 25% of our races on the grass, right? So, well, we didn't run as much, so, you know, the designation, it should always be as obviously as accurate as possible. But now we're running, I mean, let's face it, as long as it doesn't rain, we're running, you know, 60% of our races on the turf.
Right.
So I think it becomes even more incumbent upon us to take the measuring of these courses more seriously. And the idea, as anybody who looks at things from just purely a mathematical standpoint, you can't tell me that you've got heavy, right? Let's just say we've got soft, yielding, good, and firm, okay? As we know, we run a handful of races on soft courses over the year, right? We're pretty much only going to run them. I don't mean us and I, I mean everybody in this country, but, you know, you can focus on us if you want. We're only really going to run a soft if it's a major stake. We've got a lot of rain, so that's going to happen very infrequently. So that's an outlier. And even yielding is a spare, right? How many races are on yielding, right? I mean, even that is pretty rare. I'd be surprised if it's 1%, to be honest with you. Maybe it's 1%, but I'm dubious. And good, you know, there's probably a power percent, but I'd be willing to bet that we run 90% of our races on the turf in Naira on firm turf. And to say that you've got turf courses that are, you know, sort of 90% or more of the time the same designation, it just doesn't make any sense mathematically, especially, you know, and now we're running so many of them. Why do we have this grading system that sort of looks like sliver, sliver, slightly bigger, sliver, and then the rest? You know, you've got firm. To say that firm in November at Aqueduct is the same as firm at Saratoga, or firm in July at Belmont, it's just not, it's ludicrous. And they used to label courses hard, and I'm not saying that's the answer, just to add hard. And, like, you know, I guess the thinking was, oh, trainers wouldn't run on the course there. Yeah, because trainers are so stupid that they don't know what the condition of the course is, and owners. I mean, that's just dumb, you know. Anytime we make decisions like that, it's dumb, because we're insulting the intelligence of people involved in the game. And I mean, some people might say to me, well, don't overestimate the intelligence, but come on, let's be realistic. I'm sure trainers know when the turf's gotten very firm, you know. And I don't forget about that. It's really more for the bettors. I mean, you just, we need to come up with a system that rates it better. I don't know if it's, they measure these courses, and I think Pat Cummins made some comment about, you know, 1 through 10 or something, and whether it's a numerical system that rates them, which is fine with me. But if turf racing is going to become such a big part of our game, we need to reevaluate the way we're labeling these courses. And I don't think it's that tricky a thing to do. That's all.
There's the not spectrometer, the light.
There's a
name.
It's not that hard. Let's do it. And nobody's saying it's going to be accurate. You know, it's not like the gelding information that the forms never should have put in because it's not accurate all the time. Just want a reasonable, you know, you want to see, I don't want to, because there's going to be a firm, you know, let's say it's, you know, one is soft and, you know, firm starts around 4, for instance, right? It's going to be the major designation because let's face it, most of our racing is around firm. But I want to know when it's a 4 or a 10, right? You know, you want to show that. And we talk about it a lot, like at Aqueduct. We'll say, well, the Aqueduct firm in November isn't, you know, be careful to judge that. Yeah, it's the firm. But still, it's not, you do have to, listen, we're not, the bettors do need to figure things out on their own. This notion that, you know, I find one of there, somebody said, oh, you should bring in a day before the day. No, bettors need to keep track of things for themselves and certain things. But the races should be labeled on a given day accurately. Wouldn't it be great if you saw a horse that was running that was really, you know, effective in the 4 and 5 and 6 range, but once you got the 8, 9, and 10, the horse didn't run as well? Wouldn't that be more beneficial to horse players?
No doubt.
And it's clearly going on, and you can't expect horse players to go back to every day and say, oh, that was, you know, extra firm or something. And we're just, we want it, we're offering a product, and we're not taking it as seriously as we should in a certain way.
Well,
when I say and we, it's us and Naira, it's everybody that's turf racing. I think everybody needs to, you know.
And what's interesting about it is, I mean, we've got how many different designations for a wet track? We've got, you know, very accurate.
Well, they're field or, well, we lie a lot, so we don't. Actually, we don't lie. We're not liars. We're good. We had that one mistake day where we should have listed as sloppy on February 24th, and we listed as good, but that was just a mistake. But, you know, I mean, there are tracks that, you know, that seem to think they can't tell people what the track condition is and they won't bet it. And tracks need to be honest. But, you know, I'll give you an example. Remember Claiming Crown Day at Gulfstream at the opening day of their big meet, when they had these ridiculously slow times in the turf race, and everybody was saying it like, oh, you know, the timer malfunctioned everything, and I think Craig wouldn't time things. They were accurate, you know, roughly accurate, whatever accurate is there. And it turned out that there was something had gone with the course where they'd been watered, or something had happened where the courses were actually, it still continues to be listed as firm. It wasn't firm. It's still listed in the form as firm. It can't be firm when you're running times like that, you know? So, you know, that would be another one. And I'm not saying that to pick on them, you know, but it's whatever. You can always use specific examples. We need to find a better way to judge our courses, period.
Yeah, well, it was a point well made, and it received a very positive response by people, too. So I wanted to include it. Let's get a couple of...
It makes too much sense for us to do it. So.
Well, that's the case for a lot of times around the
I'll start fighting for it, but I don't know. See where it goes. I just think it's, you know... I mean, listen, we need to take things seriously. It's a lot of money bet on our products, and you know, we need to address these things in a serious manner. That's all.
No, agreed. And there's
respect for everybody involved.
Well, and you know? there's people that have these concerns about various areas. Obviously, CJ Milkowski, you know, when it comes to the timing, right. it makes him crazy when he sees such a haphazard approach.
Crazier. We all crazier. Crazier. Me, Craig, everybody.
We're starting out from there's a certain starting
Craig
point.
Is racing timing ombudsman, you know, he is in a way, you know, he is the guy that's out there, you know, talking about it. And he's the one guy who's talking about it. And I think it's great that he does, you know, I do. And he takes it seriously. It's important to him, and he's dead right.
Yeah.
He's dead right.
You mentioned the gelding, you know, that's a report that's very difficult.
Poorly executed.
Yes.
It's poorly executed, and it's not. You know, they just decided they wanted to do it, and everybody got all excited, and people weren't out there saying, wait a minute, unless this is 99.99 accurate, and the problem is jurisdictions like Florida, which do a terrible job and always have getting their new geldings, and there's, you know, there are times. And, you know, we've always, you know, we've been good about that in New York, and I'm going back way back. And, you know, Kelly, who works in the racing office, is very good about, you know, emailing me and saying, you know, this horse actually ran as a gelding last time, so he's not a new gelding and telling stuff. And it comes up more often than it should. It doesn't come up all the time, but that was not executed. I believe in the new gelding information, but I also don't believe in giving out information unless it's very, very close to 100% accurate like that. I don't think that is.
Agreed. And it's hard to know. You know, you see dates, you know, there's horses that may get
right.
turned out over a winter. They got gelded on the farm, and then, you know, suddenly 3 days before the first start
right.
is
the
days
date. Before it starts or a day before it was entered. So it's right. Yeah, and I mean, that's another thing. Yes, we're smart enough to know that that's crap. So we just say, well, it was gelded sometime in the last 4 months, and I'm not really concerned one way or the other. But yeah, it's just not being, and it's also not being reported. Horses will come to New York. They ran in Florida. The second time start, I'll say it's a new gelding. And of course, it was gelded for its first start, but it wasn't reported. Because they've done a terrible job down there, particularly Pennsylvania is not very good either. But the Gulfstream, you know, not even Gulfstream, it's Florida. I don't want to just pin on Gulfstream. It's a Florida situation. I've noticed this for many years because I've been following first-time geldings. Because, you know, you could tell in the past when you know, you kept old programs. And any time a horse was coming off of, you know, a month or more layoff, because back then horses ran more often too, don't forget. I would look at the program the last time they ran.
Sure.
There's a colt. I mean, it's, you know, it didn't take that long because there weren't that many layoffs to look at. It's part of the work you did when you used to win at the racetrack when all the information wasn't available. All these people say, this is more information, more information, more information. Yes, it's also helped made it harder to win. But
true.
Anyway.
That's true. Speaking of win, starting with the Belmont Festival weekend, Brian Lynch has come alive, and that was some effort by Oscar Performance.
I didn't know Brian was dead.
Well, he was 0 for, he went into the weekend 0 for 16 week before last.
Well, after Saratoga last summer, it was hard to really, you know. good for him. Brian's great. I love Brian. So glad to see him doing well. I know he had the stake winner in the Wonder again. And Oscar Performance. You know, Oscar Performance is a funny horse because, and Brian, I think, had mentioned this. Maggie talked to him before our show on Friday. And I agree, you know, that maybe he's really a miler all along. And I think if you look at it, I'd like to book Lady Aurelia in this race, by the way. I hope she wins, but I'd like to book her. That maybe he's just a miler all along, really. And he's such a talented horse that he was able to win at these longer distances. And the reason he was running at those races, well, that's where the big money is. You know, there aren't a lot of $1.2 million three-year-old turf races. There's one. And he's just so good, he managed to win it, right? And the Secretariat's probably the second biggest purse for three-year-old turf horses. And he went out for that and won it a mile and a quarter. But I think that he was winning at distances that were past his best distance, and he's just a very talented horse. There's a real chance that he could be a really, really good miler, and obviously his performance on Sunday was just terrific, and the poker was one of those rare races that lived up to its pre-race billing on the racetrack. I mean, Major Look ran super to finish second. I thought that Goose Song probably ran the best race he's ever run in finishing third. And this is a horse who's run some good races, and obviously had a tremendous Saratoga, but, I mean, that was some performance by Oscar Performance. I mean, he wasn't that far off the pace. He made the earlier move to it. And, you know, it's not like he was saving a ton of ground, not that losing a little ground wide is a big deal, but I thought he just ran great in there. Really, really well.
Well,
all first three all ran well.
Well, and you also have the sibling that won that Emmy performance that won the nightcap.
Yeah. They both had guineas in their first starts, and they both won their second starts. Emmy Performance got some ride by Joel to win that race, by the way. I mean, when Joel's good, Joel's as good as anybody.
Exactly.
Not better
right?
than almost everybody. I'll criticize Joel because he'll give some dopey rides, but, man, is he good. He's ridden very well overall at Belmont. He throws in his share of bonehead rides, but, man, I think he's as good a rider as this in the country. And he just has a consistency issue, but when he's riding,
exactly.
Well, I think he's great.
Exactly.
I think he's great. I think that people tend to underrate his talents because, you know, they like to beat up on him on Twitter. And he asks for it sometimes, but for the most part, he's a fabulous rider.
Well, and he's also good humored and,
well, I love
you know,
he's great.
Yeah, he's
great.
Very
I
affable.
I like him. If you know him at all, it's impossible not to like him. Likeable guy is behind the track.
Well, speaking of likable, and you mentioned Lady Aurelia, she's 6-5, and it feels, you know, she hasn't
like her
won
last race
in a year.
She shouldn't have lost that Kingwood race. Well, maybe she'll win. She'll win back to it. I'm dubious. I hope I'm wrong. She's a nice horse.
No, she is your. She's your 6-5 favorite. You're looking at Batash. For Sheikh Hamdan, Charlie Hills.
Did he win at Dovey last summer? What's their big rate? He didn't win that. What's that? Le Maurice de Geest.
No, the Prix de la Bay.
He won the La Bay.
The De La Bay, okay. Yes.
You know what? The Prix de la Bay, that's run Arc Day, right?
Yes.
They run it at Longchamp in that straight course in the backstretch. Yeah, it's funny. Yeah, that's the race that's open for. Is that the race? One of the races that's open for 2-year-olds and up.
Is that it?
Some of them are. I think the July Cup is for one of those. One of those.
Well,
summers, but that one might be too.
Well, what was the race that Wesley, he went to the...
Second with a two-year-old in one of those races?
Yes, yes.
Yeah.
Yes, and I can't remember. When you look at this King Stand, the winners have come quite a bit from the Temple Stakes as an example, and Washington D.C. was second. He's 15-1 right now for Coolmore.
He's not that good.
Not a fan.
Haven't we seen him? Didn't he run over here?
Yes. Oh, sure. Absolutely. He came over. In fact, maybe more than once. He was eighth, beaten two lengths in the turf sprint last year at Del Mar.
As I watch Royal Ascot, I say to myself, boy, am I happy I'm not wearing a morning suit right now.
When it's warm.
If I get back to London in time to see Pearl Jam tonight, I'd be happy.
I thought they're playing there tonight?
They played there last night and tonight. Yeah.
Very cool.
Yeah,
well, the other...
I was there.
Another, of course, you know, the horse that we should mention in here is that Declaration of Peace that won the juvenile sprint at Del Mar this year.
Oh, is he in there?
Yeah.
Boy, this year he could have won $1 million race.
Second off a layoff in here. There's really, I'm looking at the price market. There's really, in this particular race, the first of the three this morning, there's really no glaring disparity other than Buchero, which we understand. American market, 23-1, and in the bookie shops, 50-1.
Yeah, you're rooting for him.
Well, we like Gleyshaw. He's
that's
terrific.
Cool. Who's riding him? Jose riding him?
Yep.
Oh, well,
yep. And he'll be forwardly placed. Guarantee you that.
Well,
I'll tell you the horse.
Yeah, go ahead.
Here's a horse, Mab's Cross, the 11, the filly. She is 18-1 in the market, and she is 25-1 on the tote. That's your lean, looking at the marketplace versus the tote, if you want to throw a horse in at the bottom.
You're kind of covering all the horses here, so after the race, you can say you mentioned that horse.
No. I'm just showing the disparities. this is kind
not,
of a mysterious
I'm not
field.
I'm a 20-horse sprint where I don't know anything about horses.
Well, there's only 14 in here.
Oh, I'll just get there. I like Racing Post. You ever use the Racing Post site? You can jump from horse to horse and see who they ran against and look at the races. It's fun. I did some of that last night.
Well, apparently, speaking of Racing Post, apparently they lifted some verbiage from Dave Grenning.
What do you mean?
You'll see it
they
later.
They stole things from Dave?
Yeah, apparently.
When?
Today.
Smart. Dave's good. If they're going to steal,
you might as well steal from the best.
Right. Dave's great. So, really? When did this happen?
I just saw it. I just saw Dave when I was on the break. I saw that Dave
tweeted.
You'll see it.
Say?
You'll see it. You just said here's a classic example of plagiarism.
Wow. Well, that's not right.
Dave pulling no punches.
Well, he's right.
I agree.
But I doubt Dave wrote something if he didn't feel he was justified. He's not that guy.
Yeah, exactly.
You know?
Exactly.
Well, that's not right. Especially, you know, I mean, you shouldn't do it to anybody, but geez, Dave. I mean, he's the hardest working guy in racing. He's the James Brown of horse racing. He really is. What a job he does.
And you should see him dance. You should see his dance moves.
I see what he does working. I mean, the people at DRF don't appreciate what that guy does for them. And he does for racing, frankly. He's somebody that, you know, he's another guy that should be recognized by, you know, instead of, you know, these individual Eclipse Awards and things, they should recognize the people that really work hard for this game. And Dave Grenning, for going on 25 years now, has been with the New York Post and with the Forum for almost 20 years now. I mean, the guy puts out more stuff, the job he does, I really think that he's about as underappreciated as anybody could be in this game. And he's a friend of mine, but I've got plenty of friends I wouldn't say that about. Not that they don't. A lot of people don't do a good job.
Agreed.
Dave's remarkable. I mean, somebody should take a close look at what that guy does during Saratoga.
Yep.
He does have some help up there, and Mike Welsh is there too. But Dave likes to be the workhorse, but man, does he deliver.
Very much, very much. Well, let me give, let's warm up. Unless you want to stay for the race.
That's fine.
Yeah,
who's your next guest?
Dr. Stephen Allday. We're going to talk about the heat issues, like with Irish Warcry, who just cannot take heat and humidity.
He's a quirky horse. Too bad he's a nice horse.
Yeah. And
I might be one of like the very, very few people that have ever met Steve Allday.
Maybe.
Right? I mean, vets are very elusive, aren't they?
they can
are.
Be.
I mean, I don't mean that in any, because they, you know, how many do you hear names you don't know who they are? I only randomly met him at dinner one night. Tony Guttrow introduced me to him years ago in Saratoga.
Well, he
was actually the night that we hired Maggie full time.
Oh, really?
So that was a long time ago, right? It was like 2010.
That's about right. Yeah, six, seven. Yeah, probably. Yeah, probably.
Max London's. I like Max London's. You probably never eat at Max London's, right?
Once in a while, with you. We'll go for lunch.
I love that. Oh, we've gone for lunch.
I know you do.
The bakery next door, the restaurant. I ate dinner there when I was up there last week.
I haven't had an evening meal there in a while.
Oh, it's great. Max's is great.
I don't know why I don't. Low it's
food,
one of those places.
Food's good.
For me, it's one of those places you just don't think of for some reason.
It's good. It's good. It's, you know, they don't take reservations, so it's a bit of a pain in the ass. So I don't go there. You know, I go there on off nights and stuff. And they don't recognize what a huge star I am. So, you know, I can't just call them up and get a table. Big, huge star that I am.
Well, you should, if you called races, maybe they.
Larry, yeah, I'll talk to Larry about that. No, I think they wouldn't recognize what a big star Larry is either. Probably why I never see him there.
That's pretty funny.
But it's good. No, it's good. It's not crazy expensive, and the food's very good. Good menu, good pizzas.
Yeah, I'm glad you planted the seed. That's a good idea. It's a very good idea.
Yeah, we eat there a lot. I like it there.
That's a pretty room, too.
It is. It's a great place. No, it's nice. A nice bar. Good bar to go to and eat at the bar. Watch baseball. Yeah. But, you know, it was nice being in Saratoga last week. It gave me... So you go up like a month before, because I'll be heading up there in 3 weeks from tomorrow. And, it sort of reminds you of how nice it is. Right? I mean... You know, you walk downtown and stay out late, and it's nice, you know. Circa is really great. It's just a lot. It's a lot of work, but it's really a great place.
Well,
really,
they're getting ready.
Amazing, magical place.
I've been over, got to go over later today, actually, but you can tell just the activity levels and, you know, people finishing up the whatever work they've got on
I was checking out the new boxes. Joints.
It's pretty cool, huh?
It's a great view. It's a great view from there because you're right on top of the turn, and you can really see how like the turn is banked. You know, you can really see that. It's a really cool view. It's really great.
It's almost sold out already. It's a huge hit.
That was a very, very good idea. I'm not going to tell you whose idea it was. It wasn't mine. I'm not that smart. But it was underutilized. Really underutilized space.
Empty space.
I think the number was 16% or something that those seats were used during the course of the meet, which basically comes down to Saturdays, you know?
Correct. And big Saturdays, too. Not just, I mean, it literally
there
was...
seven of them, so 16% would be 1/6, right? So
there you go.
I mean, I'm saying it's, you know, right, it's probably not. Probably the Woodward in the first week is probably limited, and the others are much more crowded, you know.
Exactly. Yeah. No. Well, it's going to be a, people be great, are gonna, yeah. really going to like it. Let's take a look. We were waiting for one horse that had to be escorted by hand. And I'm not sure who it was, but...
You're ahead of the NBC, by the way.
Am I?
Yeah, by a few seconds, because I...
Interesting. Well...
Yeah, I saw two different finishes, actually, at last race.
Well, there you go. They're going to... Now they're looking like they're ready to load. Let's give you a rundown. Batash has taken plenty of money late and is down to 2-1, and Lady Aurelia up a little to 7-5. So they're much closer than when the wagering started a half hour ago, but those are your two very clear favorites. From there, Blue Point.
So she's wearing Stone Street, right?
Yes.
She didn't last year.
Yes, yes.
She didn't last year. Okay.
No. Blue Point off the trip to Chatin. 6-1 right now. And your third choice very clearly. And then into the teens. 12-1, Washington, D.C. 13-1, Catchy, Tom Dascom. Kalachi, 5-year-old. Then up to 15-1, Different League. This is Peter Brandt, partnered with Coolmore.
With the Coolmore people, right?
Yes.
Yeah, I noticed he was running a Peter Silks. I think I see one of the... I saw one of his races, or I saw something, and it was running with Grant Silks. Or maybe it was just in the listing in the Racing Post countries.
Well, take a look, too, at 19-1, Finsbury Square, the Irish bred, Maurizio Del Sanchez training, and Olivier Pellier.
It's muggy.
Riding.
Must be great to be there in the morning suit in the muggy weather, right? So great.
Well, we wish Pichero best of luck on a good trip. The Cantheros 6-year-old and Tim Glyshaw.
Cantheros was Stone Street, right?
Yes, and of course has been moved from Florida. Moved to Florida and is now standing at Hill and Dale.
Oh, cool. Johnny's riding Lady Aurelia, right?
I think so. Yeah. Why? Yeah. Must be.
We picked him out last year when Frankie Dettori was hurt. Right? Couldn't ride him.
That's right. That's right.
Story at the airport. Award. Story. I'm not buying.
We've got one more maybe to load, and we'll be ready to send them in the Group 1 King Stand. A couple more maybe. This. Wow. There we go. They're just about set. King Stand.
And they're off in the King Stand Stakes. Batash out very quickly. So too Lady Aurelia. And well to the four, Gifted Master and Bucero, the light blue, also very prominent. And up there in behind is Blue Point, along with Ornate, Bucero losing ground. And then Mab's Cross as Batash leads Lady Aurelia. Towards the back of the field, Different Gear. Catchy is quite prominent also. It's Batash that leads them past halfway as they run towards the two. Lady Aurelia poised under John Velasquez. Catchy, Blue Point is in behind, and then Bucero, Finsbury Square with a lot to do. Batash has got Lady Aurelia off the bridle here. Blue Point is chasing hard, but it's Batash that leads the way towards the last furlong. Batash has the advantage. Lady Aurelia's beaten. Blue Point is chasing. Mab's Cross is finishing well. Blue Point is chipping away at Batash, the near side under William Buick, and Blue Point has got to the front close home, and Blue Point has won the King Stand. Tight second, Batash and Mab's Cross running on. It's tight for fourth. Bucero running a big race with Finsbury Square and Different League.
Well, Blue Point.
Bucero was third?
He was fourth. He, you know what? He ran very well. He got kind of lost approaching the midway. I think he was thinking, where's the turn? And then he quickened and finished very well. Lady Aurelia. Very disappointing here. Blue Point, the Charmadal 4-year-old for Godolphin, that had to be scratched going back to going back to Dubai World Cup night, and
obviously, he
would have been the favorite. Yes,
I'm sure he would have won. Good golf horse that night.
He's a nice horse, and this is a big win for him. It looking like Batash, and you know, you would think Batash, they had to think Charlie Hills, they had to think that he was a winner once he put away Lady Aurelia, and then he got pounced upon. And I didn't notice there's the horse that I think it's that Mab's Cross that we mentioned, the filly, the Dutch Art filly. I think she's third and Bechero fourth.
Close for fourth. I wouldn't be very close.
Not
to
sure.
Fourth and fifth.
All right.
I don't know. I mean, just looking at it right now and TV, it looked close. I'm considering. I don't know which one is which. I can't make an opinion. Yeah, it looked like what Batash was going to hold off the winner. He sort of ran to him. He kind of spurted a little bit, about a half a furlong to go, but winner grounded down. Batash must have been going pretty quick early. I'll bet you that was a relatively speaking pretty quick pace. You know,
it was Finsbury that was fourth and Bechero fifth.
I bet Steve Alday is sitting by that phone, and he's probably blaming me for you not calling. So I'm going.
All right. Well, Andy, this was great. I appreciate it. And we will talk in 3 weeks ahead of we're
so
off the next two Tuesdays with you.
I don't know what I'm going to do with my Tuesdays.
You'll find something. I'm confident.
I'm thinking sleeping.
See you later. Andy Serling, everybody. And of course, the Mother Goose is coming up, and we'll talk. Maybe we'll squeeze Andy somehow in for a visit that Thursday, grudgingly, ahead of the Stars and Stripes, July 7th. Well, that's a tough photo to lose for Iron Horse Racing and for Timmy Gleishaw, but a terrific effort. Both of the American runners that we've seen today, Yoshida and Bechero, with game efforts. And again, folks, the two horses that had a look based on the mutual versus the bookie shops, Finsbury Square and Mab's Cross, and they finished third and fourth. So, I mean, not winner indicators, but you know, certainly and a little bit actually, I guess actually going back to the opener a little bit, right? Mentioned, you know, accidental agent, a little bit of the hint. So the winner of the first, but this is for me the most reliable bellwether is, you know, to try to find horses to include that don't have obvious merits at a glance on paper. But Blue Point, we've really going back to World Cup night and the Alquaz sprint. Really, this is a big win for him. And I'm just looking to see going through his form. You know, last year he was third in the Commonwealth, and where else has he? At Newmarket, he was second in the Middle Park, which is a Group One, third in the Dewhurst. He's a nice horse, and that's a career defining win for this Chamardal 4-year-old. Certainly for Godolphin, a very big score. Let's take a break here, and we've got one more, and it's a big one. The St. James Palace going to go the mile on the old, what they call the old mile, and that comes. That comes when? At 11:20, I think. Right? 11:20. So let's take a time out. We'll look for Dr. Alday to visit, and we'll talk the warm weather topic. I've also got a visit with Nacho Correa's coming. Stay with us.
The latest racing news. It's At the Races with Steve Vick on Sirius XM Radio.
Do you want unlimited access to handicapping without exorbitant prices? Then BrizNet.com has you covered with a variety of plans for past performances, pedigree, and raw data. The BrizNet.com Performance Plan offers unlimited PDF past performances for just $75 per month and is available at BrizNet.com/PP. American Produce Records Online puts the pedigrees of nearly 1 million dams and more than 2 million foals at your fingertips, plus sire stats, for only $275 per year, and is available at BrizNet.com/APR. The BrizNet.com data plan offers unlimited access to race day data files, perfect for handicappers with their own database or to plug into other people's programs. The data plan is just $125 per month. Visit BrizNet.com for all this information and more, and discover why BrizNet.com is the handicapper's edge.
Horsebills.com is a cost-effective, time-saving, paperless revolution. Vendors are able to generate electronic invoices for owners and other vendors who can pay through Horsebills.com for just 50 cents. Turn hours of work into minutes with our easy-to-use site. Have our team take over your bookkeeping or continue to do it yourself and pay only our low monthly subscription fee. Check out our video tutorial on the Horsebills.com YouTube channel and get started today for free. Horsebills.com. Toll-free number 888-938-4643.
Your barn is successful. Your program is tried and true. However, there are a few horses that aren't responding in the way you'd like. Does this sound familiar? Well, let Biomedical Research Labs help change that. Our clinically proven products will help your equine athletes become their very best. I guarantee it. This is Joseph Vellante. To learn more, contact me at 215-501-6880 and visit brlscience.com.
Learn the business of horses in the world's only accredited equine business program, the University of Louisville Equine Business Program. The University of Louisville has a legacy of excellence for more than 25 years of equine business education. Classes are taught by industry experts in state-of-the-art facilities located in the heartland of America's equine industry. The University of Louisville Equine Business Program. When it comes to horses, we mean business. For more information, visit business.louisville.edu/equine.